Restraint petition of Sergio Gonzalez Guzman.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Andrew Kennedy, on behalf of petitioner Sergio Gonzalez Guzman, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The issue here is whether Mr. Gonzalez Guzman received ineffective assistance of counsel and whether the existing record is sufficient to establish that he did without needing to resort to a reference hearing.
Well, doesn't the state concede the assistance was ineffective, but the question is whether he's prejudiced?
Well, they did make an argument that possibly there were other explanations for why counsel didn't pursue this line of inquiry, but I believe that we've established through our reply that none of those explanations really have any basis in fact. So I think the issue here truly is prejudice that there is any conflict over.
Given some of the factual errors in your expert's declaration, how could we resolve this on the record before us?
Well, I think there are two responses.
Some real significant ones.
With all due respect, I don't believe that the errors are truly that significant.
Well, let me give you one that really troubled me and jumped right out at me. He describes a broken femur. The actual injury is a broken tibia with a spiral fracture from a torquing motion, and no explanation from your expert how that injury could have occurred with the defendant's explanation.
Well, I think there's two responses to that. The first is that if you look at the bones of the leg, a conclusion that a broken tibia is likely the result of an accident is much more plausible than a femur being the result of an accident, given that the femur is a much larger bone and it's higher up in the body. So if
explain me how a fall as described would create a torque spiral fracture.
Well, as he described it, he said that it's the result of extreme deformation caused during a fall. I'm not a doctor. I can't necessarily describe how exactly that would happen. But his conclusion was that a femur could result in this injury. I think a tibia is just as likely. But frankly,
so
the other
told us you have no expertise, and now you're telling us it's just as likely. Doesn't that explain why we should let someone have some evidence?
Well, I think that if there was evidence necessary, I think that the state was in a position to find someone to say this is a ridiculous conclusion, and here is an expert that would say getting a femur and a tibia wrong demonstrates that this person doesn't know what he's talking about, but the state didn't do that. The state is conjecturing just like anybody else is doing. And I think given the urgency of this matter, I think that we should go with the one expert that we have who says this is consistent with an accident rather than the state's conclusion that maybe we should have a hearing when they could have gotten an expert and they didn't.
So we should accept a factual explanation that assumes erroneous facts because there isn't another expert?
Well, again, I don't know that it's so much assuming erroneous facts as so much that he identified the wrong bone. I don't know that it was...
Well, it's a pretty significant difference given the mechanisms each explains for how the injuries occurred.
Well, I don't believe that he said it wasn't a spiral fracture so much that he said it was a tibia, not a femur. So I think that is a significant difference in that regard. That if he had said it was a snap of the bone rather than a torque, that might be significant. But the fact that he got the two bones mixed up in his description, frankly, I also think that it's not clear that he actually was mistaken about the bone so much as that he wrote the wrong name of the bone.
There's nothing in the record to support that assertion, is there?
No, I'm just saying it's equally plausible that he wrote the wrong bone rather than that he was mistaken.
If it's plausible, how do we find that it's likely that the jury would have accepted his testimony?
Because, again,
or
I believe...
Or found a reasonable doubt. That's probably a better way to phrase it.
Well, because, again, he's the only person that we have right now looking at it.
We have seven other medical experts who testified at trial. I mean, he's not in a vacuum.
That's true that he's not in a vacuum.
Your argument is if this was presented with the other seven, then it's likely that the jury would have found a reasonable doubt and found your client not guilty. That's your argument.
Yes. That there's a reasonable probability that if this was put up against them, even with someone saying, you're wrong about
brief,
the phone.
You thought a reference hearing was a good idea. Your brief asks for that relief.
at the time...
It's only in your reply brief when you have a concession from the state that you ask something more.
At the time, we did say that, and I would say there are two explanations for why we changed our position on that. One is that we anticipated the state would present evidence that attempted to contradict Dr. Gabayev's declaration, and that we would think that a referencing would be necessary to hash that out, and no new evidence has been presented. The other thing is, frankly, there's been a shift in time. Our brief was filed 10 months ago. Now our client is slated to get out of prison in 2.5 weeks. At the time, we thought it was always in his interest to demonstrate his innocence, which a reference hearing would have done. But now a reference hearing does him very little good if he gets let out of prison and sent back to Mexico.
Once he gets released in 2.5 weeks, is there some procedure before he's removed from the country?
There are many procedures that we're exploring, and we're attempting to pursue them all.
I mean, is it a foregone conclusion that if he doesn't get this resolved in 2.5 weeks, he's going to be leaving the country?
No, that's not a foregone conclusion.
Frankly, we don't get our opinions out that quickly very often.
I completely understand that, Your Honor, and I don't expect this court to get an opinion out in 2.5 weeks, but I would just implore the court to act with as much haste as possible, given the urgency of the situation. No, he's not. I do not anticipate that he's going to be released and deported in 2.5 weeks, but the clock is going to be running, and whatever immigration remedies we pursue, at some point they're going to run out, I think, if this conviction stands.
So we don't need to assume that 2.5 weeks is a deadline.
No, 2.5 weeks isn't a deadline, but it's when that clock starts running, and from what we've seen, things do move relatively quickly on the immigration side of things. But I think getting back to what Your Honor was asking about, the inconsistencies in Dr. Gabayev's declaration do not demonstrate anything that doesn't prove that it's not credible or based on reliable medical evidence. There's one significant mistake that Your Honor has pointed out, but there's nothing to demonstrate that would not have been sufficient to convince a jury that there's a reasonable probability that this was the result of an accident. The fact is...
No people could reach opposite conclusions from the assertion you just stated on the written record?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
People reading the written record, is it your position that all could conclude that it's a likelihood that this would have caused the jury to find a reasonable doubt, or could reasonable minds disagree about that conclusion?
Could reasonable minds disagree about whether it's a reasonable probability?
Yes.
I wouldn't think so. I think it is clear that there's a reasonable probability that given all of these circumstances and when presented with a plausible explanation that a jury would find that there was an alternative explanation. I see that my time is up. I will reserve for the remaining 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. If it please the court, my name is James Wisman, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County. I'm representing the state of Washington in this matter. Your Honor, we stand by our earlier request that a reference hearing be ordered. There are a couple things that concern me about this case, not the least of which...
Can I ask you a question about...
Yes.
Do you concede that Mr. Gonzalez-Guzman received ineffective assistance of counsel?
I did not formally concede that because...
Are you prepared to concede that?
I am not, just because we have a declaration from him that makes it clear that he did consult a medical expert, and I think some additional questioning on that point is warranted. I don't think we have to take at face value his claims that, in retrospect, that what he did was insufficient. I will tell you, though, that I don't expect that to bear a lot of fruit. I think that an objective observer looking at this would conclude he should have just called, at least consulted an expert.
I mean, when the money's available... What's the strategic reason why you wouldn't take advantage of it?
Yeah, there isn't much, except, as I say, it's clear he consulted an expert, and if you look at his cross-examination of these witnesses, it's clear that he had prepared the appropriate questions to deal with this.
Is there any indication that the expert had the medical records at the time he consulted?
I do not have that information, Your Honor. I believe that the lawyer asserted he hadn't sent it, but I'm not positive about that.
So
I don't have any affirmative evidence on that.
Would you agree that if he consulted with an expert who did not have the medical records, that would be ineffective?
That I would agree it would be deficient. Yeah.
All right. Okay, it's deficient. A synonym for ineffective, or are we parsing words?
Ineffective requires both deficient and prejudice.
Okay, I'm trying to.
It would be constitutionally
deficient.
He would
fall below the standard of care for an attorney, and then the only question for the trial court would be whether the defendant suffered prejudice.
Correct.
As a result.
Correct. That's the only distinction I was trying to make. I think the primary issue ought to be prejudice, and I think that the court has already focused in on a couple of the deficiencies in the existing showing. I'd like to note another one. Dr. Gabeff claims that there wasn't a 3D reconstruction of the skull fractures done from the radiology, and that was another fault. Well, clearly there was, and Dr. Wiester testified to it at pages 64 and 87 of her testimony. That was on June 17th. That's extremely important. I mean, that is the nature, that goes to the core of the nature of the head injury. She described it as a large skull fracture. I can't tell from reading his declaration whether he accepts the fact that there's a skull fracture or not. He says things that indicate both, which kind of goes to the difficulty of sorting out what really his position is on any number of these issues. Frankly, it appears that his declaration was just recycled from some other case and dropped into this one. As I pointed out, a number of factual errors that were made in his review of the records. My concern, though, was that defense counsel and Dr. Gabeff, had he been so inclined, might not have been able to review all of the records because they were missing at the time he made his request. So,
are they still missing?
No. We have now made a request and gotten those records.
So if we have a reference hearing, the trial court will have available to it a full medical record.
Yes. And I'll just note, Your Honor, that we made our concession when we filed our brief on November 2nd. The reference hearing may have been concluded by now. Had counsel availed themselves of that concession, but they made a different strategic approach. That's their right. But if there's a time crunch, it's not a time crunch that we put them in. And he didn't file this PRP until June of 2016, and I don't think we got it until sometime after that. So we've done, I think, the best we can under the circumstances. A couple of things, though, that I'm concerned about, one of them has to do with the scope of this reference hearing. An important aspect of Dr. Gabeff's theory seems to be this idea that oxygen deprivation exacerbated the child's injuries. And counsel seems to believe that undercuts our theory that this was an intentional rather than an accidental occurrence. And I'd just like to say that's a straw man argument. Our theory...
We're familiar with... The consequences that if you harm somebody and there's negligent medical care later, that doesn't intervene and protect you.
Fair enough. And I would just ask if in some way the court can indicate that so that we don't have to spend a lot of time and energy on that issue in a reference hearing where the trial court has to sort through both the law and the facts on that point.
Does it matter in terms of the scope of the injuries for purposes of the sufficiency of the charge?
No. We have to show a great bodily injury. But I don't think there can be any dispute that was shown by the massive brain bleed that would have caused death without medical intervention.
And the skull fracture itself.
And the skull fracture. Skull fracture, I guess it would depend on the size of the skull fracture, but it's the brain damage that results attendant to. But the basic point is that a lack of oxygen doesn't cause your brain to bleed. And so this massive brain bleed that this child had was going to result in either death or extremely serious death without medical treatment, but extremely serious disabilities even without medical treatment.
Would the state be required, if this was being retried, to prove that but for the oxygen deprivation alleged by defense expert, the same long-term consequences would have resulted for the child?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think, but whether we would or not, I am almost certain, of course, this wasn't addressed in the record and developed, I am almost certain that we would meet the standard for assault in the first degree, faults of a child in the first degree, just based on the injuries, the brain bleeding and the brain damage that stemmed from that. The doctors
regardless of the residual status of the child?
Right. And if you look even at Dr. Gabeff's declaration, he says, and I quote, the bulk of the brain damage occurred before arrival at Harborview, but treatment events compounded the baby's problems to some degree. So I'm not even sure there's that much of a dispute over that. It has been turned into a bigger part of their argument at this point. But like I say, I don't think that we need to get into these nuanced discussions about causation, because at bottom, this case is about whether it was an accident or whether it was intentional infliction of trauma. Our experts concluded it was intentional, not simply based on the degree of the brain injury, but also based on the fact that you had broken ribs and specific ribs that were difficult to break. It indicated a certain mechanism, that you had the retinal hemorrhaging, that you had the skull fracture, and that you had the spiral fracture of the tibia. And as I think Your Honor has already hinted at, it's almost impossible to imagine how, in a fall as described by the defendant, the child's leg could be twisted in a way that would break its tibia. As a couple of the experts testified that you can have such injuries if the child, for example, foot is fixed or trapped in a car seat and the child falls out of the car seat.
It's just an injury familiar to skiers.
It is. It is. And that requires a fixed, point at the end of the leg and a twisting motion. And that is inconsistent with what the defendant described in his own description of how this happened. So, anyway, I don't think I need to belabor those points, but I did want to urge the court, if the court was going to order reference hearing, to limit the scope as much as it felt it could. Causation issues. The basic issue here is, was this accidental or was this intentional? And that's a question of fault more than from what did this stem. With that, I just ask the court to order a hearing and rest my comments. Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd just like to reiterate that the reason that we're in this position is that the court and the state may find issues with some of the statements that Dr. Gabeff has presented, but the state has not presented any sort of counter-expert to try to explain this. So we're left with their conjecture versus our conjecture.
Isn't that one of the reasons we have reference hearings, so we can explore what the facts really are?
Well, that would be an opportunity if there were a dispute as to the facts. But I would posit that there's not a true dispute as to the facts. The state could have gone to an expert and said, hey, present us with an affidavit saying why you think that you, as a medical expert, think that Dr. Gabeff is wrong about a tibia versus a femur. They didn't do that. I don't know why, but they didn't. Regarding what the state has said about oxygen deprivation, I'd just like to point out that the jury's verdict was not in isolation. So, yes, there were injuries that were caused before the oxygen deprivation happened. But the fact is that the government presented the jury with a case where they said, look at these tremendous injuries that this child has suffered, and they have to have been the result of intentional trauma. If you look at Dr. Wiester's testimony in Appendix
B... Aren't they going to hear that evidence even if there was a new trial and there would just be conflicting evidence as to cause?
Yes, there would be, but I'm just saying that to the extent that they say that what caused the severity of these injuries based on the oxygen deprivation, I don't think can be divorced from the conclusion of was this an accident or was it not, because there could be an accident that's exacerbated by a lack of oxygen incident.
Well, if there's an accident, it doesn't really matter whether there was negligent medical care or not. Your client hasn't committed the crime charge.
True. I'm just saying that what was presented to the jury was, look at these tremendous injuries that this child suffered. They must have been the result of intentional trauma, whereas an accident compounded by inadequate medical treatment is much more plausible. So I'd ask that this court remand and reverse. Thank you. And do it as quickly as possible.